Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
I chose to take the morning and just listen. That's what I've done. Just listen. Watch sports on TV. Listen. Read. Just I just take it a morning where I had a cup of coffee early, had my dog, and we're just like, I'm just going to listen and watch. And there's like five people in sports media who want to make some statement, some grandiose statement. And I heard Bucky Brooks on Colin Cowherd, and thank God for Bucky Brooks. He's like, yeah, this kind of happens everywhere. Guy, coach brings in their guys. It's really what it is. which is like, here's the bigger point. It relates to the Tebow thing and you know, trying to make Urban Meyer's team. It relates to the Aaron Rodgers story as well. Have you ever seen the TV show Survivor? Survivor. Ramos, are you a Survivor fan? Have you seen
I am
Survivor?
Not. I understand the premise. I know what it's about, but I am not a watcher of that show.
You never watched, never had a season that you've watched?
No, I mean, I understand. I've had it on the TV. I've seen it. I maybe sat through a couple of the moments of it, but I'm not like, oh, I got to come back and watch that next week.
How many seasons do you think there have been of Survivor?
I want to say there's been like 30.
Okay. Without looking, without Googling, Gavin, how many seasons do you think there have been?
I was going to guess 20.
But you looked?
No, I was okay. Going to look, but then you told me not to.
Don't look. What if I told you there have been 40 seasons? Woohoo! 40 seasons. Is it Mark Burnett, I think, what produces all of them, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, Mark Burnett is literally swimming in money. So is Jeff Probst, because not only does Probst, has he found a way to steer clear of some of this other stuff, which has caused hosts to lose their job. He's going to get residuals from all this. It's on not only network TV, but it's being replayed at all hours of the night on syndication. He's going to go out to his mailbox for the rest of his life, and there's going to be a check there. Literally every 1st and 15th. He'll never have to work again. And I'm not sure you could say he's really worked all that much other than traveling to these incredible locations. That said, you said you understand the premise. What's the premise, Ramos?
I think the premise, it's a game. I'm not quite sure how much of a game it still is, but I understand that at the beginning it was people would get there and they'd try to outsmart somebody else and see who can stay on the island the longest.
Okay. Is it a... do you believe it is a... is there any correlation to what you see to real life?
That's a good question.
I know I ask good questions.
I would say yes, there's a correlation.
Okay. Gavin, your opinion of the show is what?
Well, I think you can think of the voting thing as a pretty democratic process, kind of like we have here in America.
What if I told you that life is basically Survivor? I used to watch this show when I was in Russia. We got my first true professional basketball gig, started in January of 2001. Bounced around in the fall, 2001, I flew out. I was in Perm, Russia. I played for a team called Ural Great. We won the championship. And every week we would get a care package from my mother-in-law. And in it would be Kool-Aid packages. We love Kool-Aid, right? We used to get this mountain spring water from the river that was incredible. But like they didn't, at that time, in that part of Russia, like they didn't even really have Coca-Cola, which you call Coca, right? But they had, and they didn't really have like Gatorade or fruit drinks or whatever. It was, they drank chai, which is tea, water, but room temp, and occasionally a coca, coffee, and beer, vodka, and cognac. Cognac you drank in honor of Stalingrad. And that's really all you had to drink in Perm Russia in 2001. So we'd get Kool-Aid packages, but we'd also get VHS recordings of Survivor. It was the biggest show on earth. Now, my initial attraction to the show was the idea of people going and being survivors and living in the wild, right? Kind of like
Naked and
Lord of the Lord of the Flies, I was thinking. A Lord of the Flies-esque, you know, but also Naked and Afraid. What Naked and Afraid has become is kind of what I thought Survivor was. So at the time, I was really into the first couple seasons. Then I kind of got turned off because it became about alliances and allegiances and voting. And, you know, it became a game. Do you know what else is like that? Real life. Real life. More on that in a second. Discover matches all the cash back you earn your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover's accepted 99% of the places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen report. Limitations apply. The real life is just like the game of Survivor. They tell you in business it's not about what you know, but who you know. Damn right it is. You'll have alliances and conflicting alliances. And that becomes really, really hard to manage. It's what started World War I. You don't have to like the show Survivor. You don't have to like the characters. You don't have to respect the players. You should respect the game because that's how it works. ESPN's Jeff Darlington. Not everybody, obviously Urban Meyer is the one behind all of this, but not everybody in the Jaguars building is thrilled with this. They don't think that it necessarily sends a proper message to the team in the locker room and but the guys are trying to make this team. Devin Bush, who plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tebow just got Kaepernick. Wait till we play Jacksonville. Okay, Devin, you sound like an idiot. Hey, Gavin, you got a computer in front of you?
I do.
Can you Google for a second?
Okay.
Pittsburgh, schedule, 2021. The dates have not been released, but the opponents have been released. Do the Pittsburgh Steelers play the Jacksonville Jaguars?
They do not.
I want you to Google and make sure. Make sure you have the teams. We know they're not in their division in the AFC North. Okay, so they're not the Ravens, not the Bengals, they're not the Browns. Okay, they're not any of these teams. Help me out. Go and give me the other teams the Steelers play. Make sure that the Jaguars are not among
them. Okay, obviously Ravens, Bengals, Browns. They also have the Bears, Broncos, Lions, Raiders, Seahawks, Titans. They have the Vikings, Chargers, Chiefs, Packers, and Bills.
But no Jaguars.
No Jaguars.
Okay. So first of all, you sound like a complete buffoon relating Kaepernick to Tebow. Right. Second of all, you sound like an even bigger buffoon talking about can't wait till we play Jacksonville. First of all, they're not even on your schedule. Second of all, Tebow's not even on the team yet. Third of all, don't you have an injury to come back from that's a little bit more important than throwing yourself into this kind of woke passion fest for Colin Kaepernick? Bro, last time Colin Kaepernick was a good quarterback was 2013. You were a sophomore in high school. It's obviously part of your formative years. Okay? But you're now a professional. And oh yeah, by the way, Devin, when you turn 36, you should hope that Jim Harbaugh is a head coach in the NFL. Do you know why? Because the way the world really works is those alliances, those, hey, I was with him once and I was great once. That's what gets you a job. That's what gets you a job. It's why you go to Ohio State or why you go to Michigan or why you go to Florida, right? Gators hire Gators, Buckeyes hire Buckeyes, Wolverines hire Wolverines. In sports, we talk about football families and basketball families all the time. My basketball family is going to celebrate the Hall of Fame induction of Eddie Sutton this Saturday in Springfield, Massachusetts. It's going to be a great day. Great day. And anytime I need something, really, really, really need something, do you know who I call? I call the people who coached me, knew me, school I played at, people who went there, those connections. Those are my alliances. You just, if you haven't figured it out yet, okay, the world works exactly like Survivor. You want to know why Colin Kaepernick's not in the league? He was about to go to the Baltimore Ravens. John Harbaugh is the coach. Yes, he happens to be related to Jim Harbaugh, who coached Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco. Greg Roman's our offensive coordinator, who coached Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco. Why didn't that happen? Because his girlfriend put out a meme likening the owner of the Ravens to Django Unchained and a slave owner. Yeah, didn't sit all that well with Steve Bisciotti. Didn't, especially a guy who was loyal to Ray Lewis after all that Ray Lewis went through and put the franchise through. Right? Like the idea you call guys a racist because who stands by all of his players, black, white, or otherwise, kind of comical. And oh yeah, by the way, it's infuriating to the point where you can't get a job. And guess what happens with that alliance? Goes away. Love you. Would do anything for you. Can't have you on my football team. Why? The owner's pissed. The owner's pissed. So Jeff Darlington can report that some guys, who cares that some guys don't? The only thing that matters is what the head guy wants. And the head guy is Urban Meyer. And he's tired. He took over a franchise that's been good twice. Once way back in the day, Mark Brunell, Keenan McCardell, the Fragile Fred Taylor, those dudes, right? And about like 5 years ago, they beat the Steelers in the playoffs, had the Patriots dead to rights in the first half, chose to kneel on the ball because they didn't trust their quarterback, and they fell apart there shortly thereafter because they extended a quarterback, Blake Bortles, who wasn't good enough. So over 25 years, they've been good twice. And Urban Meyer's like, you know, I'm going to try and turn around the culture here. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to bring back all of the guys who I know, they know what I want. Go look at his coaching staff. And oh yeah, by the way, most of his coaches from college, he hasn't put in positions of power. He just hasn't. He's been really, really smart about it. Why? Well, quite frankly, because if you get right down to it, most of them have been coaching in the National Football League. You know? So he's not gonna put guys in positions to fail. Charlie Strong is his assistant head coach and inside linebackers coach. That is not a position of power. Why would you bring in Charlie Strong, who's been a college coach his entire life, who's part of Alabama's national championship winning team in 2020, who's been a part of Urban Meyer's teams back with the Florida Gators? Because he knows the players and he has an alliance to Urban Meyer, who he used to work for. And Darrell Bevell's the offensive coordinator. Man, Darrell Bevell's like, there's no real connection there, but he's a pro. He's a pro. Go to the defensive side of the ball. Chris Ash is his defensive backs coach. Like, Chris Ash, the Rutgers coach? Yeah. Do you know where he was like 6, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, before it was a disaster at Rutgers? He was an assistant at Ohio State. You bring back guys that know what you want, how you work, and they can spread the gospel of your beliefs in the locker room. That's what Tebow is. And by the way, he hadn't made the team. And might not make the team. And if he does, it's the last roster spot. He's going to have to play special teams. He's going to have to prove he belongs. Because he can't fool players. If a guy can't play, a guy can't play. But we make these ridiculous statements. Just idiotic statements. Comparing and correlating Colin Kaepernick to Tim Tebow. It has nothing to do with, well, Tim Tebow has a belief in Look, all the other stuff makes sense. He's trying to make it as a tight end. He's got great energy about him. He's just going to try and make the team. He's from Jacksonville. Maybe he sells a couple of seats. They've struggled to fill up that building. All of that stuff. The big part is there's an alliance there. There's an alliance. He is part of that football family. And to anybody in that room who says, I don't really get it, well, then you don't get the football family because you're probably not part of it and means you probably won't be part of it. Right? It's like people who don't understand. In college basketball, it's just like college football. College basketball, if you work for Rick Pitino, you're part of the Pitino family. For better or for worse. And he is the most powerful voice in picking up the phone. And he has, there's CM Newton that he used to have call people. And now he has Billy Donovan call people. Because Billy played for Rick. Rick turned around Kentucky. CM Newton was at Kentucky. It's all a big, it's all one big alliance. It's just like Survivor. Just like Survivor. You know? There's the North Carolina basketball family. There's the, all these, they have football families. What happens when the Patriots, and so one of the Patriots gets hired somewhere else? Guess who they bring in? Guys that they played with, worked for, whatever. Now, it hasn't worked for the most part outside of New England, but it doesn't stop people from joining up with assets, guys who they know, guys who they're comfortable with. Go look at the Buffalo Bills. Look at the Buffalo Bills. You had a head coach and a general manager who came from Carolina, and a head coach who before that was in Philadelphia. Everybody who he brought over worked with them before. Look at the Washington football team and Ron Rivera. All those guys were with them in Carolina. And by the way, in your place of work, it's probably the same thing. My place of work sure as hell is. My boss is Scott Shapiro. I worked with him at ESPN. So did Colin Cowherd. Huh, so did Dan Patrick. That's funny how that works. That's how the world works. You work with somebody, you trust them, you like them, you know their quirkiness, their ins, their outs. You know about how much they make, how much they're worth, where they are in their life. Are they willing to make a change? Can they help you change the culture? Do they work the way you want to work? If you get along with them, like, you hire them. That's what you do. And all of these idiots who say things about Kaepernick, they just don't get how it works in life. Life is just like Survivor. It is, by my estimation, the most important show for business students to watch in the history of television. I didn't say it's the best. That's Cheers or Seinfeld. Or the funniest, or the best written. It's not Ted Lasso, which I binged in 2 days and cannot wait for season two. It's not The Queen, which I'm binging now and I'll watch during breaks. Okay, it's not Breaking Bad, an amazing idea and really, really, really good show. Although I kind of think a bit overrated. I like The Wire better. That's just me. All of that said, the most important show you should watch if you want to know how business actually works is Survivor. Because the other part of Survivor, which is totally accurate, and I know for a fact, and you probably do too, you may not want to admit it, is no matter how good some of these friends are and people and alliances are, at the end of the day, push comes to shove, most people, not all, most people, their last default is to protect themselves, worry about themselves and their own livelihood. That plays out in Survivor all the time. That plays out in life all the time. Hey, we're great friends. We're dear friends. We're ultimate. But I don't want to get fired. And if it comes down to me or you, it's going to be you. And all of these guys that make these comments, you know, Devin Bush 11, by the way, has nothing to do with whole race protesting, just competitor versus competitor. No, it's not. You made a comment about something you don't understand about, and eventually you will. And all of those guys in Pittsburgh, if they go elsewhere, if your defensive coordinator goes elsewhere, you're going to hope that the first call when you're a free agent is from your former defensive coordinator. Why? Because that's how life works.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
LeBron James is going to give his right ankle one more day to rest versus the Knicks. A target return of Wednesday versus the Rockets. Sources tell at MC10 and me. That's Adrian Wojnarowski. In not related news, Russell Westbrook broke Oscar Robertson's triple-double record. He had 28, 13, 21 assists and a loss to the Hawks Monday night. He topped the Big O's previous record of 181 triple-doubles. What's amazing about it was, obviously, Brad Beal hurt his hamstring, and so he had to, you know, Russell had to completely carry the team, which he did. But they got the ball back down one, and with 3.5 seconds to go, he took a contested three with two guys on him in classic Russell Westbrook fashion. You know, I can't believe, yes, I can completely believe that Russell Westbrook did that. Here's Russell after the game.
It's just a blessing, man. You know, you put so much into the game, you put so much time, you sacrifice so much to put into the game and to be able to just be mentioned with guys like Oscar and Magic and Jason Kidd and those guys. It's just something that I never would have dreamed about as a young kid growing up in L.A. And I'm truly grateful for moments like this. And, normally I don't like to pat myself on the back, but tonight I will.
good. I like Russell. I mean, I think he's a hell of a player, you know, and when he plays with full energy, people say, well, nobody plays harder. Like, it's not really the case if you actually watch him. A lot of the seasons in Oklahoma City, there were tons of possessions. He didn't play hard on defense, but then he'll make a great play and make a mean face. And you're like, oh, well, yeah, he did. I can respect Russell Westbrook, the man, very good man. I can respect his competitive instincts. Meanwhile, I'll tell you, like, love how much he competes and how much he likes the game and how much he's gotten better. Don't think he's, you know, one of the all-time top five, top 10 point guards. And most people in basketball would agree with you on that. They just wouldn't. It's like, I love him. He's great. Do you want him on your team? Not really. Not really. Not really. High volume guy, low percentage make guy. Yes, he gets a lot of assists. Is he a creative passer? No. You know, he's just not. He's fine. He's good. He competes. He gets the rim. He kicks off. The guys make jump shots and they'll make dunks and he'll do some good things. But I mean, he's not in the great scorers in the NBA. He's not LeBron or James Harden or even Steph as a passer. And in the great point guards in the game now, he's not Chris Paul as a passer. You know, he's just not. So he puts up some numbers. If you're into that sort of thing, great. He's done a very good job not allowing this ship to go astray and getting them into what appears to be the playoffs. He has no flaws off the court that I'm aware of, and for that should be rewarded. And it's a great accomplishment. Does it make him one of the all-time great players? The answer is no.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
John Shipley joins us, Jaguars reporter from SI.com, @John_Shipley, if you want to follow him on Twitter. John, how is the, let's just start with the Urban Meyer. How has the Urban Meyer hired been viewed in Jacksonville?
Yeah, no, I think most people, at least inside of Jacksonville, have been really excited. I think, you know, he's kind of re-energized at the very least the fan base and, you know, some people within the organization because, you know, for as successful as Doug Marrone was in, you know, the 2017 season, Doug Marrone and Dave Caldwell were never really, you know, going to excite the fan base or anything like that. Whereas, you know, Urban Meyer, he's definitely going to do that because of his past history as a high-profile college coach and the fact that, you know, he won a national championship at Florida. And there are a lot of fans who intersect, you know, between Gators and Florida fans. So I think the initial reaction was excited. And I think, you know, after the draft, people are still, you know, pretty excited.
All right. Now, what about the Tebow news?
The Tebow news is much more of a mixed bag of reaction. I think you have a certain fraction of people who see it as, okay, what's the harm in giving a guy essentially what's a tryout spot? Because, you know, it's a spot on the 90-man roster in the event he does get signed, you know. It's not a guarantee to be on the 53-man roster. So I think a lot of people are saying, what's the harm? Whereas, you know, some other people are saying, okay, does this maybe cause any concerns about maybe Meyer's transition to the NFL? Because there's no other coach in the NFL, you know, that is trying to bring in Tebow as a tight end. Every free agent tight end on the market right now and who has, you know, even played a snap in the NFL is technically more qualified to be signed by the Jaguars than Tebow as a tight end. So that's kind of the balance with it. You know, I think a lot of people are kind of excited just at the prospect of it and the fact that, you know, it can be kind of a feel-good story. And plus, like I mentioned, there are a lot of Gator fans inside Jacksonville. But I think there are a lot more fans inside Jacksonville who are kind of wondering, okay, what exactly are they attempting to do with this?
It's not that different, though, to hiring Charlie Strong, though, is it, right? Like, Charlie Strong, you're like, well, he obviously helped him when he's at Florida, went on to be his own head coach, then was at Alabama. And he's like, look, I'm going to bring you back. You're one of my guys, like Chris Ash. I'm not going to put you in a position of power, but I'm going to get guys that are loyal and know how we operate and know how we do things. And those are the guys that are going to be around us. It's not that different, is it?
Yeah, I think my argument would be, you know, bringing a guy on a staff. And I actually wrote yesterday that if Urban wanted to bring Tebow into the organization, then by all means, you know, do it. But it'd make more sense to bring him in onto like the support or the coaching staff than as a player. Just because in the NFL, roster spots are so much more valuable than, you know, they are in college, especially, you know, Meyer's background. He hasn't experienced a true, you know, 53-man roster before. So I'm not sure he really, you know, yet knows just how important that roster spot could be, even if he is a bottom-of-the-roster kind guy. And then at the end of the day, you know, Tebow, as successful as he's been as an athlete, guys like Charlie Strong, Chris Ash, you know, yeah, they don't have NFL experience, but they at least have experience, you know, as linebacker coaches, as defensive back coaches. Tebow, the last time he played tight end was in high school. So I think those would be the big differences there. But in terms of just trusting guys that you know and bringing in people that, you know, you really know inside and out and that you are positive can instill the kind of culture you want, then no, it's not that different. It's the same thing Myers kind of preached all offseason. He's placed a big emphasis on relationships, you know, in free agency, in the draft, and, you know, his coaching hires, and this wouldn't be any different.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. John Shipley is our guest, Jaguars reporter for SI.com. Okay, so now you have a new quarterback, likely a new running back, a whole new coaching staff, but you have this league that right now there's a pushback on dudes showing up for OTAs for off-season workouts. Where are the Jaguars and their players in regards to these protests?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The Jaguars, you know, to this point, they've been one of the few teams who actually, you know, haven't put out any statements through the NFLPA. I think, you know, at least from the looks of it, you know, the Jaguars, you know, they've had good attendance in their virtual meetings, and they're actually set to have their rookie mini camp later this weekend, you know, actually on Saturday. So I don't think that they're one of the teams that, you know, like the others, have kind of been, you know, opting to, you know, either not come to off-season workouts or anything like that. I think that they've had a decent amount of buy-in, at least at that level, because, like I said, they're one of the few teams who didn't make any kind of comment to the labor union, like through the labor union.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, so quarterback will be different, and you have a quarterback in Trevor Lawrence who he played not terribly far from Jacksonville. He's from not terribly far from Jacksonville, and he's as hyped as any quarterback we've had since Andrew Luck, right, coming out. What are reasonable expectations first year in the National Football League for him?
Well, I think the expectations are, at least, you know, within Jacksonville, is, you know, for him to at least, you know, live up to the hype to an extent, you know. Maybe not walk into a 1-15 team and obviously turn them into a winner and, you know, barely lose any games like he did in college and high school. That, of course, would be ridiculous to expect. But I think people are expecting him to come in and at least play, you know, maybe like a Justin Herbert-level player from last season, a guy who comes in and automatically looks like he belongs and can create explosive plays really at will. You know, Herbert wasn't a perfect player last season, of course, but he set multiple records, and there were times throughout the season in which he just looked like the next big star at quarterback. And I think if the Jaguars can get similar production out of Lawrence, just considering where they were a year ago, especially at the quarterback position, I think that would be considered a big success and would give them a good trajectory moving forward with Lawrence.
No question about it. It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Travis Etienne brought in as running back. How much of that is based upon their evaluation? How much of it is based upon his relationship and play with Trevor?
I think a lot of it's based on his evaluation. I wouldn't say none of it is based on his relationship with Trevor. I think giving Trevor, you know, somebody he's familiar with in the offense, and especially somebody who's a skilled player that, you know, he's had a lot of chemistry with the last couple of years, makes a lot of sense. But I think, you know, even if he went to a school like, you know, UCLA or Washington or Penn State, I think the Jaguars still would have picked him at number 25, because the way Meyer made it sound after the draft is, you know, they were targeting a very specific kind of football player at number 25. You know, they wanted an offensive playmaker who could, you know, really be utilized all throughout the offense. Meyer noted that this player that broke his heart at Penn State was Florida wide receiver Kadarius Toney, who was more of a, you know, offensive weapon than a true wide receiver. And then Etienne, you know, in the days following the draft, Urban called him a slash-type player who would kind of be utilized as a dual-threat player. So I think Meyer really wanted to just add, you know, an electrifying home run threat to the skill player group, whether it's that running back, whether it's that receiver. So I think that Etienne would have been the selection, you know, even if, you know, him and Lawrence had never met.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. John Shipley is our guest. John, great stuff. Awesome insight. Thanks for being our guest on Fox Sports Radio.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, and I hope you all have a great week.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Antonio Daniels joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. He's a longtime NBA point guard and, of course, the Pelicans color analyst. He joins us on Fox Sports Radio. Antonio, help me out with Zion's injury. Like, you know, David Griffin came out and said, you know, guys are just allowed to foul him, and that's how he hurt his finger. What really happened? How did he injure himself?
Well, I mean, the thing is, he injured himself because he on a rebound, going for the ball. But Griff's point wasn't about just the injury. It was about the way he's officiated. It wasn't like a one-time thing. He wasn't saying, well, the only reason that this happened was because. He's saying it was a culmination of the way that Zion is officiated and some of the physicality that's allowed with him. We know this. We know that guys are officiated differently. It always has been that way. I can sit here and tell you, my 13-year career, we were allowed to get away with murder on Shaquille O'Neal. I'm talking about murder because he's bigger and stronger than everyone else. LeBron James, there's a reason that he flops now, because if he played through everything, he would never get a foul call, because there's not a person in this league that is strong enough to knock LeBron off of going from point A to point B. Guys are officiated different in this league, and this league has done a fantastic job of protecting the shooters, protecting guys who are shooting threes and protecting guys who are shooting step backs to make sure that you have to be really cognizant of contesting those shots, giving them room to come down. Once you get in that paint, it's been a little bit different. The physicality is ramped up a little bit. I agree with what Griff was saying. And obviously, he used some adjectives to get his point across,
right.
But the point that he was actually trying to make, that Zion is officiated different, and covering Zion since he's entered this league, I cannot agree with him anymore.
No, I'm with you. I thought it was a little bizarre in terms of the timing. But also, you you can tell me if I'm wrong, there's a little bit of LeBron in this too, is that, look, he ain't a jump shooter yet. And so
right.
He attacks the rim.
For sure.
He's unbelievable at attacking the rim. And so it makes it really hard to officiate him, because do I give him the benefit of the doubt all the time when he's the aggressor with the basketball?
But that's basketball, though. Like, if you think about it, basically, and I'm not saying this in reference to the official, but that's their job. That's a part of the job description. I honestly, truly believe, I did an interview yesterday about this same thing. I honestly, truly believe that next year it will be different. And the reason I say that is because Zion is one of one throughout the history of the sport. You can say the dominance is compared to Shaquille O'Neal, but they do it different ways. Shaquille O'Neal was 7 foot. He caught that ball on the box and initiated contact and dished out punishment. A lot of Zion's drives start outside the paint, sometimes outside of the three-point line. So the way that they attack is a little bit different. And I think it does take officials a minute to adjust to what they're seeing. I've said from day one, Zion to me is one of one in the history of the sport. We haven't seen a guy built like this, with this athleticism, this power, this agility, this handle, this soft touch, and this second jump around the rim. So it's going to take officials to kind of adjust to his style of play. Because like you said, Doug, he initiates contact. He initiates contact. He doesn't go away from contact. He seeks it.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. It appears as though it's a long shot that they'll make the play-in tournament. Is that a good thing or a bad thing for the franchise, considering they won't have Zion?
As far as what, to make it?
To not make it. It would take a lot for them to get in still. With 38 losses, I don't think they're getting
in. The number is one. That's actually the number. San Antonio has 4 remaining games. The Pelicans have 3 remaining games. And the Spurs will have to lose out. And the Pelicans will have to win out. So the Pelicans still have to go to Dallas tomorrow. Golden State Friday, and then you end with the Lakers Sunday afternoon. So you have to win all three, and the Spurs have to lose all four. Do I think making the play-in tournament would have been great? I think it would have been fantastic because it gives you a sense of what the playoffs are like. Because a lot of this core that you're talking about, they have zero playoff experience. Eric Bledsoe has playoff experience. Steven Adams has playoff experience. Zion doesn't. Lonzo doesn't. B.I. doesn't. Nikhil Alexander-Walker doesn't. Jackson Hayes doesn't. You can go down the list of guys that don't have playoff experience. And what even making the play-in tournament would have done is it would have given them an opportunity to play meaningful basketball when other teams have gone home. Because I'm in favor of the play-in tournament because of what's going on right now. You're playing meaningful basketball that matters right now. And we all know at this time of the year, if you're in 11th place or you're in 12th place, and you're talking about an 82-game regular season where it's 1 through 8, players have sent their cars home already. You are more concerned with the offseason. You done made your vacation plans already. But teams that are still trying to make the play-in game are still laser-focused. And I like that. I love playing meaningful basketball in a time where there ordinarily would not be playing meaningful basketball. I'm a huge fan of the play-in tournament.
What do you think the future holds for Lonzo Ball?
Oh, man, that's a great question. That's a great question. We used to have a saying as players, you know, all you need is one team. All you need is one team to believe in you. And I don't know what the market will dictate for Lonzo. Me personally, I would love if he stayed. I would love if he stayed because he has become a really good fit next to B.I. and Zion because of he's worked on other aspects of his game. And this is what the NBA is now. It's basically you put the ball in your best player's hands and surround your best player with guys whose skill set complement theirs. And Lonzo, with his ability to shoot that basketball now, the confidence that he has in that three-point shot, he has become a guy who can facilitate and pass, a guy who can knock down three-point shots, and he's also a really good defender. So I would love it if he stayed. But I don't know what the market will be for him for other teams that would like to acquire his services.
Yeah, it's a hard one. It's a hard calculation. It's a very hard calculation. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I'm sure you watched the other night. I felt like it was a double win for the Lakers. Not only did they get Anthony Davis going, but if I'm Phoenix and it looks like the Lakers are going to be in that seven spot, I couldn't possibly feel good about a seven-game series against a team where I don't match up with Anthony Davis well. They didn't even play Schroeder and LeBron. I love what the Suns have done this season. I hate that matchup for the Suns in the first round of the playoffs.
But you think about it, man. We talked about this today on our SiriusXM show. There's a lot of different matchups that, like, does the Utah Jazz match up well with Golden State? I don't think so. There's certain matchups, and this league is all about matchups.
Correct.
Just because the team is ahead of you in the standings doesn't mean that they're a better team than you are when y'all meet head-to-head.
Agreed.
And there are certain teams and there are certain matchups, I think, that are going to be so interesting to watch. If I'm any team in the Western Conference, I'm not paying any attention to the fact that the Lakers may finish seventh. That's not fooling anybody. Everybody knows that they are the defending champions, and they have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. That's what really matters. So whether or not they finish in sixth, seventh, eighth, no matter where they finish, no one wants to play them. Nobody wants to play Lakers. The Lakers that you saw for the majority of this season where they were injured and they were undermanned and they were lacking firepower and lacking leadership, you best believe if they get that LeBron James back, they will not be that same team throughout the course of the season. So I don't think it's a lot. I don't think it's just Phoenix. I think there are a lot of teams in the Western Conference, regardless as to where the Lakers finish, that do not want to see the L.A. Lakers.
How would you care? You used to do everything in Oklahoma City as well.
Uh-huh.
Russell Westbrook has the all-time triple-double king. You've seen him. You've been around him. You've called his best and some of his not-so-best moments at times. For somebody who played in the NBA and understands the position, when you check out Russell Westbrook, how would you contextualize it?
Oh, man. One of the most fierce competitors this league has ever seen. And I think when it's all said and done, I think we have two guys that are playing in the NBA right now that will be the most unappreciated throughout the course of their careers. One of them is Russell Westbrook. The other one is Chris Paul. I think what Russell Westbrook is doing is tremendous. And I remember going on different platforms years ago when I was in Oklahoma City talking about what he's doing. It's not just the numbers. It's the fact that the numbers translate to winning. That's what really stands out. You know, when he triple-doubles, they win 75% of the time. People can call him empty numbers if he's getting triple-doubles and they're winning 10% of the time or 5% of the time. But the fact that these numbers that he is accumulating translate to winning games, isn't that the sole purpose of basketball? To try and be the best version of yourself when you step on the floor, to try and accumulate as many stats as you possibly can as long as it translates to winning. And I think his best attribute, you can look at his athleticism. I think he's the most explosive point guard in the history of the sport. But his mentality and his willingness to win is second to none. We talk about Kobe Bryant and the Mamba mentality and Michael Jordan and his approach to winning basketball games. And you have to throw Russell Westbrook in there as well. You would go to war with that dude any day of the week because his energy and his passion is contagious.
I mean, I get all of that, but I would also tell you that that if I was being totally fair, I would say, like, would you take Chris Paul ahead of him? Would you take Jason Kidd ahead of him? What would you do?
Well, I think it depends on what the overall, the way my team is constructed. What am I looking for? You know, what else would I have next to Russell Westbrook? What else would I have next to Chris Paul? Because the thing is, we're talking about three different players that do three different things. Chris Paul is a fantastic game manager. Game manager. Like, he can be so impactful, and he just understands time, score, situation, what's needed, and when it's needed. He'll have 4 points throughout the course of the game, but in the fourth quarter when his team is trailing, run off 16 in a row. You know, one of the best clutch players in the league. Jason Kidd, the way that he transformed who he was from a triple-double guy to toward the end of his career becoming more of a knockdown shooter. And Russell Westbrook just has a motor that doesn't stop, along with the athleticism, along with the willingness to win. When the game is over, he ain't shaking hands and exchanging jerseys. He ain't doing that. There's no love lost. He is out there to win basketball games. So I think, it's not about which one would you rather have. Because you can't go wrong any way you break it down. When you're talking about the greats of the game, for me, it's about how your team is constructed and how each one of those guys would fit in at that particular position.
Who's going to win this thing?
Oh, man, Doug, you're killing me. That's a toughie. All year, I thought it was I went with Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Because I'm a firm believer. As much as we say defense wins championships, I get it. And that sounds fantastic. But this is an arms race. This is an arms race where offense has never been more rewarded in today's NBA. The most valued skill in today's NBA is shooting. The Brooklyn Nets, prior to losing LaMarcus Aldridge, had the most firepower, in my opinion, ever accumulated on any team, ever. I'm talking about bucket getters. You have three of the top one-on-one players in the league, 1, 2, and 3, any way you break it down, on the same team. Then you add in a Blake Griffin. Then you add in LaMarcus Aldridge. And then you add in guys like Joe Harris. But when you remove LaMarcus Aldridge from the equation, that changes things, in my opinion. I think you'll see the Lakers and I still think you'll see the Lakers and Brooklyn in the finals. Man, I you know what? I'm going to have to get back on – I'm going to have to get back at you on who I think is going to win that one.
Fair enough. Antonio Davis.
I got to see if LeBron James and Anthony Davis are healthy and if James Harden's healthy as well.
Antonio Daniels, 13-year NBA vet. Great dude. Pelicans color analyst and a really good one. At A.Daniels33. And thanks so much.
For sure. Thanks, Doug.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's get you to Charles Robinson, Yahoo senior NFL reporter. Charles, where do you think the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are?
You know, I think it's somewhat of a stalemate now, but you know, the fact that it's quieted down is probably good. I think, you know, at this point, what's gotten out into the public, pretty much Aaron's feelings are out there, and his unwillingness to come out and knock any of it down, you know, I think he's sort of allowing it to linger out there and see how public opinion forms. And I think the Packers now are in the mode of, what do we have to do to, you know, to convince this guy that this is a place where he needs to be? And if this is a rehash of 2018, when, you know, Aaron was upset about some of the things that had gone on with his quarterback coach and Jordy Nelson and some other players, you know, the Packers threw a ton of money at him in a contract extension, and it resolved it. And so I'm wondering if now that's what the Packers are thinking, that, hey, look, this is ultimately going to come down to the right number, and whatever, you know, mea culpa needs to take place with Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, to convince Aaron that, you know, he's respected and that, you know, mistakes were made and that the franchise is there to remedy it. That's the work that's in front of the Packers now, because, you know, you talk to other teams, there are other teams that would be interested if he's on the market, but there's no indication whatsoever that that's taking place. So, sans a trade, you know, potentially developing, this is the change agent's going to be the mandatory minicamp in June. And if he shows up for that, and if he doesn't, I assume he's not going to show up to the OTAs at the end of this month. And if he doesn't show up for the mandatory minicamps, then I think it starts to ratchet it up before training camp.
So where do you think do you think he's the starting quarterback game one of the season next year?
This is different than 2018 in that a lot of his feelings and grievances are out there in the public. The Jerry Krause thing's true. You know, I know that to be true. That's something that he repeated to more than one person. It got around. His feelings of not being heard by the front office, you know, are legitimate. His beef with Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, is legitimate. You know, so all these things are out there, and his unwillingness to continue forward with the franchise the way that it's structured and set up and the money that was initially on the table, that's all different. But again, I go back to 2018. I think he was pretty upset then. It really did not become this public, and it hadn't gone on as long as it has now. But money did resolve it. I mean, they came to the table and said, we're going to make you the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, the highest paid player in the NFL. We're going to do this extension, and we're going to lock you in. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, he was locked in for 2018, 2019, 2020, and what should have been 2021. And I'm sure I feel like if the Packers came to the table right now, so you know what, we're going to put a deal on the table that's going to lock you in for 4 years. So we'll take you through, you know, you're 37, we'll take you into your 40s. You said you want to play in your 40s. We're going to lock in, you know, to a deal that will make us stick with you for the next 4 years and essentially the end of Jordan Love's, you know, rookie contract. I think I'd be surprised if that didn't resolve things, if they just said, we're going to make you the highest paid player for the next in the NFL for the next 4 years.
It'd be funny. Like, I never want to play for you again. How much? All right, I'll do 4 years.
Money talks. I mean, that's we can say whatever we want, and people can say, you know, take their principled stances in the NFL. But at the end of the day, you know, particularly when it comes to grievances with the front office, the apology comes in the form of a paycheck. I mean, that's just how the NFL works. So if you're not going to oust the general manager, and I don't know, the Packers aren't going to fire Brian Gutekunst, it's not going to happen. And the feelings are burned between Aaron and Brian, you know, Mark Murphy, the team president's he's got to stand up and go, okay, look, I need to broker the peace here. However that needs to happen, you know, we need to know precisely from Aaron, what does he want in terms of when we do, you know, make personnel moves, like what will make him feel heard? What's the financial number that will make him feel secure? What contract structure does he want? If they truly want him back, somebody's going to have to give in. And if it's not the Packers, then it has to be Aaron Rodgers just standing up and going, well, you know what? It all got out there. Everybody knows how I feel. I'm going to play out 2021, and you know, expect that I won't be on the team after 2021. You know, they'll move on from me after 2021. So, you know, I hate predicting this one because I'm just telling you, man, the way it went in 2018, I really thought that was going to come to a head. And he signed a huge whopper of a contract. And then in the process of the buildup to that, and even afterward, you know, he played it off like what had gotten out about his relationship with Mike McCarthy was just media driven. Oh, his unhappiness about, you know, Alex Van Pelt being fired was media driven. The stuff about, you know, him being unhappy with how the Jordy Nelson departure was handled was media driven. That was all false. But that's, you know, that's the game that he is still left on the table for himself right now. By not talking, he has the ability to do an extension and then come out afterward and say, hey, you know, a lot of that stuff you heard was just BS. It's not that bad. It was never that bad. We were always going to work through this. And in spite of what Devontae Adams has said, and even the people who are optimistic about this who have said there's issues there to resolve, it was never as bad as the media made it out to be. That's the option he has left on the table by not speaking.
Charles Robinson joining us, Yahoo Sports. He's got the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. You should download that. Listen to him here. Follow his work at Yahoo Sports. It's outstanding. It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I look at life, and I've used this twice in the show. I feel like Survivor, when I first started watching Survivor, this was right out of college during the first year when they gave away that terrible Pontiac. Remember that one? They gave away that terrible Pontiac. But I tuned in because I wanted to see people actually surviving eating worms on a deserted island. And it became a game about alliances, right? And then I started to grow and mature and become an adult. And my son has since poured over all 39 seasons to date. I think they're on season 40 now, believe it or not. And I said, and he was like, do you like the show? I said, I don't like the show. I love the show because that's what life is about. It's about alliances. I look at the Tim Tebow thing and I think Tim Tebow is from there, played for Urban Meyer. He's changing positions. He's just trying to make a team. Okay. But it's an act of loyalty by Urban Meyer, just giving him a shot. And this, all of these other issues that, because people have a negative thought of Tebow, the Kaepernick conversation, like all of that is nonsense. And this is just how business works, where if you're going to get a shot to be in the league, it's going to be with your college coach, you part of two national championship teams just down the road. Like, it makes sense to me. How do you view it?
Well, people have to understand that when you're on the outside of the NFL looking in, whether you've been out of the league 8 years or you've been out of the league 1 year, whatever it is, whether you've got civil court cases stacked against you, whether you're considered a diva in the locker room, whatever your issue is that forces you onto the outside of the NFL bubble, what helps you get back in is an advocate. You have to have an advocate, somebody who paves the way for you. Antonio Brown, Tom Brady, paved the way for Antonio Brown to get back into the league with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year. Like, that happened. And, you know, Colin Kaepernick, you know, I made the joke, you should just switch his position to tight end and then got back into the league. It's a tongue-in-cheek joke, you know, but it continues to show you the absurdity that the NFL will stretch itself to, even because of the buddy relationships that exist in the NFL, that someone can be out of the league. Who really wasn't a great quarterback when he was in the league, and now, you know, he's getting back in the league 8-plus years later at a different position because, as you said, there's the friend network. But he has an advocate. Colin Kaepernick never really had an advocate who wasn't named Eric Reed to really get him back into the league, and in particular, not an advocate in power, meaning an owner, meaning a head coach, meaning someone who said, hey, I don't care what happens to me. This relationship is important enough for me to onboard you, and then I'll handle whatever the outside stuff is. Urban Meyer knew this was going to happen. He knew if I signed Tim Tebow, there's going to be criticism. I mean, he knows this is going to look ridiculous. But it's a 90-man roster. They could sign you as quarterback. They could sign me as a wide receiver. They could sign Daffy Duck as a running back. And it means nothing on a 90-man roster in reality, because a lot of guys float in and off of a 90-man roster before, you know, the cutdowns happen in training camp. And so this brings a lot of attention, probably deflects a little bit of attention from Trevor Lawrence, if we're being honest, because a lot of people in Jacksonville are talking about Tim Tebow. And by the way, they're not talking about him as a quarterback, talking about him as a tight end. Whatever the nature of the conversation is, it's not about the immense pressure of being anointed the next great quarterback god, which Trevor Lawrence was until, you know, Tim Tebow was signed in Jacksonville. So it deflects a little bit. I personally, whatever. Like, it's it's a storyline right now in May. You know, May, June, July, we'll see. We'll get into camp. We'll see what he does, if he's, you know, if he shows up for training camp. And, you know, we'll go from there. And if he's good enough and he makes the roster, well, then he's going to have to prove it on the field. And then the real criticism starts, because once he takes the spot on the 53, then I would say if he's in the league and Tyler Eifert isn't, you know, or Trey Burton isn't, or a number of qualified tight ends aren't, and he stinks, then you look at Urban Meyer and you go, okay, now I'm going to start talking about Steve Spurrier. Now I'm going to start talking about the big-time college coach who tried to create the big-time college program in the NFL by bringing in a bunch of college guys that he was familiar with, and how that failed spectacularly. So right now, I don't think it's a huge story other than the buzz, you and I talking about it, people, you know, debating it or whatever. I think if he gets on that 53-man roster, then you're going to really hold that against Urban Meyer and you know, also Tim Tebow, because clearly Tim Tebow must think he can do this, and it takes some stones to think that you can come back at 33 years old and play a position you haven't played.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Charles Robinson, our guest from Yahoo Sports. Who do you think is the quarterback of the Patriots? Go ahead.
Before we get to that, I just want to ask you, who is Tim Tebow going to block? Just a tight end has to block in the NFL. So if before people think, well, is he going to make the roster or not, I legitimately am asking you, how is he picking up someone on the edge? What's going to happen in a one-on-one matchup with a defensive end to Tim Tebow? I mean, realistically,
I honestly don't know. I mean, I've seen some video of him attempting to block back when he was with the Jets, and it wasn't good. And not playing football does not make you a better blocker. It's not like you don't play football for that long and all of a sudden you're a better blocker. But like, look, it's, you know, like, I mean, if I'm honest, I didn't get a training camp spot, but I did summer league and did these vet mini camps with the Lakers. Why'd I get that opportunity? I was a bad fit for the triangle. Well, my dad coached with Tex Winter, and Tex went to bat for me. Like, that's how these late training camp invites, that's how that stuff works. Right. I mean, that's the reality of business and how it works. And then, you know, if you're good enough, you stick. And if you're not, you don't. So I don't think you'll block anybody. But I'm willing to concede that I don't know that he won't. And maybe.
Oh, we'll find out. Yes. I mean, that's the great thing about the NFL, is it is the great revealer. Like, it's not, this will not be left up to question. Like, whatever he's going to be, we will see very quickly. I mean, that's. There's, when we watch guys fall in the draft, these prospects, you know, and people are like, well, he was this, he was that, or he was all conference. I'm like, all right, well, I also heard that when he went in the locker room, and it's an alpha locker room, he wilted almost immediately in training camp, and that's going to show when he gets on the field. And it is. The NFL is the great revealer, and we'll know pretty quickly, you know, what Tim Tebow is or isn't or can or can't be. But I don't know. It's not a big deal. I mean, I don't really think the Kaepernick comparison. You know, I don't think
it fits at all. But I do think, like, here's where the Kaepernick comparison works. Here's where it works, right? The one place that he nearly signed was Baltimore, because I'm sure one, you had Greg Roman there, two, you had John Harbaugh there, right? It was probably going to happen. This before they ended up drafting Lamar Jackson. And had his girlfriend not put out the meme, it probably happens, and history changes dramatically. But she napalmed that. That was his rabbi in the room, right? He had Roman. He had Harbaugh. He had the brother of his former coach. He had his former offensive coordinator. I actually think that is, if you want to teach somebody the true lesson, did the other stuff keep Kaepernick out? I'm sure it did. But the true lesson why he's out of the league was it's like baseball. You just got to have one, right? You got to have one team, one guy who will stand on the table and say, we need this guy. He had it. And they screwed it up.
It screwed that opportunity up. There's no doubt about that. The sustained lack of opportunity was a multitude of other things, whether it was political, whether it was a locker room decision, whether it was an owner decision. It's a
and
whole
play,
other thing.
And play. He hasn't been good. People forget he lost his job after 2014 because he was seen as a guy who was very quiet and wasn't an alpha, and he wasn't playing very well. And then he got his job back because of injury. Like, do I think the other things played a part? Yes. Do I think it's also he had one real good year? It's like a year and a half that he was good in the NFL. Yes, that's part of it as well. Like, it's all not one, but he did have that one opportunity. Like, imagine right now if Tim Tebow came out with something negative about Urban Meyer. Like, how, I mean, he had no, she'd never be back in the league. And granted, it's a different position. There's a lot of differences there. There's, I think, the only parallel you can draw.
I think the big lesson here is that the NFL is going to continue to pay the price for, you know, the long lens of history, and Colin Kaepernick's never going to go away.
But it's not. What price? The TV money's doubled. The ratings are up.
Oh, no, I don't. I don't mean the price of, you know, the bottom line price. I mean, the NFL's made a multitude of decisions that you could say are questionable and never paid the bottom line price for almost anything. It's been that bulletproof. So I just mean in the pages of history, how it's looked upon will ultimately be, this is the debate that happens. You know, I mean, this will probably be the last one. And it's not really a real debate. I don't think anyone really is cracking it up to a real debate. No one's really, sure, I think at this point, debating why Colin Kaepernick's not in the league anymore, you know. But I think it's a hallmark of what history, at least depending on who's writing the history, will look back and point at. Just like, you know, listen, for Pete Rozelle and Paul Tagliabue, history will always look back and say, well, you know, what about concussions? You know, what about, you know, mental health? What about, you know, for Roger Goodell, it's going to be, what about domestic violence? What about, you know, there's a price always going to be paid, and he's going to be, you know, part of the price in terms of how you want your narrative to read out, you know, when it's all said and done. So I'll tell you this, and this is actually interesting, and no one's really thought about this, but commissioners do come up for Hall of Fame consideration. And when Paul Tagliabue came up for Hall of Fame consideration, a very long conversation in the room, even though I'm not a voter, but I talk to voters, was everything about concussions, about what, you know, look, what was going on, what was covered up, what, you know, what did the league know? And I guarantee you, someday, Roger Goodell is going to come up for consideration, particularly because the revenues exploded during Roger Goodell's tenure, and he set really high standards, and, you know, he's going to get a lot of the business side consideration that Jerry Jones got and what ultimately got Jerry Jones in now, you know, already. But I think Colin Kaepernick will end up being a conversation in that room about what Roger did or didn't do. And that whole thing will start to get, you know, peeled back once again when Rogers, you know, whenever the league, you know, decides, hey, we're going to push him for Hall consideration.
That's interesting. Last thing, who's the quarterback for the Patriots this year?
It's going to, I fully expect it's going to start out that it's going to be Cam. Mac Jones, the great thing about Mac Jones is, you know, he fits in a lot of ways, and because Nick and Bill have that relationship, you know, Bill knows everything, you know, right down to, you know, Mac Jones's underwear size. I mean, he knows everything about the kid, but the kid was playing with a lot of first round talent at Alabama. He was running a college offense, you know, no matter what you want to say about the fit, you know, it was still a college offense. So there's going to be a learning curve. And the only way I think Cam does not start the season is if he comes back and he's the hurt Cam, like the Cam who looks like he can't throw anymore, that he's never recovered from the injuries, that he's a Xerox of a Xerox of himself. If that's the Cam that comes out of training camp, then I think Mac Jones has got an opportunity to start. If Bill, he can follow the number one rule with Bill, is just don't screw it up. Like, don't go out there and turn the ball over. You're going to go out there and turn the ball over, we're not putting you on the field. But that's all going to depend on Cam. I mean, it's in Cam's hands to show up and show that he can still, you know, be a starter in the NFL. And I really truly believe Bill wants to give him that opportunity. I think Bill saw enough from him and really liked how Cam absorbed the culture of the Patriots and felt like Cam was a leader, you know, for the Patriots and wants him, you know, to succeed. So he's going to give him that opportunity. So don't just pencil, you know, Mac Jones in from the start. I think it's up to Cam whether or not he can wrestle that away. Now, once the season starts, you know, we'll see. We'll see how everything unfolds. But he could get hurt too. Like, hey, Drew Bledsoe. Who was it? Mo Collins from the Jets? Yeah. I mean, enough to remember this. But
Mo
I
Lewis.
Like
Mo me. Lewis. Mo Lewis.
Mo Lewis. Mo Lewis. Okay.
Mo Lewis.
All right. Yeah.
By the way, just, hey, you know, somewhere there's a tape of me, I guest hosted on ESPN Radio that night. And I said, Tom Brady, the guy who split time his senior year at Michigan, Patriots.
Listen, I watched that year. I covered the Lions, but I didn't go to the Super Bowl that year, obviously. I watched in Michigan, in Detroit, Michigan. I sat in a living room with like 12 University of Michigan alums. You know, I went to Michigan State. I had a lot of friends who went to Michigan. 12 University of Michigan alums watched that Super Bowl, and they were, I literally remember them just sitting there going, I can't believe Tom Brady won the Super Bowl. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, they were just beside themselves with how mediocre they thought Tom Brady was. Now, let me tell you, that has changed.
the
narrative has been rewritten.
Charles, awesome stuff. Great to catch up with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me, Doug.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.